Well, I want to say first, as we start this morning, that I appreciate your prayers this past weekend. I was away in Georgia, and so I heard there was just a wonderful Sunday last Sunday, and I wished I was with you. I was preaching at a missions conference out in Georgia, and so I preached three times and did a presentation of the church planting ministry here in Salt Lake City, and it was a wonderful time just to share with other believers about what God is doing in this church. Now, part of the scope and sequence of going to another church and sharing the ministry is sometimes you have a slideshow, you know, you have PowerPoint slides that you show them about what Salt Lake looks like, what Gospel Grace Church is like. So sometimes you have a slideshow. Other times you have a video. And so I asked Laura if she would put together a kind of highlights video for me to show at this. And actually, she put together a really cool video. We'll show it to you sometime. You can know all the highlights of Gospel Grace Church. You live them. You know what they are. So I can remember showing this video this last weekend and thinking to myself, you know what's kind of funny about these videos or these presentations? Is we show all the great pictures of all the wonderful things that have happened in the last year and a half. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we revel in things like Megan's baptism. There's a picture of that there. We remember things like the Salt Lake Roasting Company when we did the outreach at the coffee shop. And it causes us to smile thinking about those things. But I thought, you know, the pictures we don't include. There was nothing in there about Nick's vertigo. We didn't have any pictures of Nick in the emergency room. Yeah, he says, thank you. Amanda will share later. We had no pictures of Susanna's car totaled this last winter storm. We had no pictures of that. We had no pictures of sleepless nights or tearful people. We had no time-lapse photography of the graying hair of some people here over this last year and a half. We didn't zoom in on the bags under people's eyes, you know, from just long, toilsome labor. But we didn't have any of those photos. And yet those are just as real as some of the things that cause us to smile and laugh, aren't they? What do you do when living for Christ gets tough? That's what I really want to talk about this morning. God speaks to us loudly in our suffering. And suffering is one of the leveling features of humanity, isn't it? Because I really don't care whether you're young or you're old, whether you're rich or you're poor, whether you have a graduate degree or not, you will face suffering. What do you do when living for Christ gets tough? What do you do when living on mission drains you? Some of you, you moved out here, and some of you live your life on mission. But you realize that doing that drains you. What do you do when being a Christian is hard or serving the Lord gets exhausting? What do you do when that happens to you? Now notice I use the word when and not if. Because it's true of all of us. I mean, Paul wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy 3:12. He says, "All who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer." You will suffer if you desire to be a disciple of Jesus. If you desire to live godly in this present world, you will suffer. It doesn't take you very long as a Christian to realize that true discipleship is difficult. That sacrificial service to the Lord is draining. And that ministering to other people can be very discouraging at times. I'm not sure what you thought you signed up for when you became a Christian. But Jesus says this. He warns you. He says, you need to count the cost. And the reason is because following after Jesus entails difficulty. It's actually called the narrow way, the difficult way. The easy way that everybody else is going on is the one that leads to destruction. The narrow way that leads to life is hard. Following Christ, living for Him, having a life that's on mission is difficult. So what do you do in those times? I've watched some of you over this last year and a half, and I've seen some of the late nights of work and I've seen some of the effects of ministering to people. I've seen some of the sacrifice. I've seen some of the long hours. I've seen some of the sickness. I've seen some of the demotions. I've seen some of the downgrades, wrecked cars, stolen property, rejection, opposition, oppression, loneliness, wearisome plotting, and the list could go on and on, couldn't it? I've seen houses that haven't sold. I've seen hospitalizations. I've seen unexpected bills and lost jobs. All of those things in association with trying to serve Christ. If you have a misconception that following Christ is going to be easy, I want to pop that this morning. That bubble needs to be popped. Otherwise, you will end up a very bitter person. You will spend much of your life like I spent much of my life, angry at God. I can remember saying things as a high schooler, saying things in my heart towards God, like, God, my dad gave his life for ministry, and this is what we get? We get difficulty and poverty and hardship. This is what we get? I can remember the bitterness of my own soul because I did not understand that discipleship means difficulty. It's kind of woven into the very fabric of following Christ. My friends, Jesus is the one who told us, listen, they hated me. They're going to hate you. Was Jesus' life a bed of roses? No, my friends, it was a crown of thorns. Why is it that we expect more? Why is it that we expect better? Sometimes as I look around, even at people here, I've seen suffering and toilsome labor. I've seen people who are weary and worn down. And I have faced that myself. And sometimes when you finish 40 hours at one job and then go plug away at 30, 40 hours at another job and then try to be a father of four kids and then try to have a sermon ready by Sunday and try to, I mean, you know, it's just difficult and sometimes you feel weary in this. And quite frankly, sometimes you feel like that little grasshopper. You remember those grasshoppers when you were a kid? You pulled their rear legs off. And then you watch them kind of grope around like this, oh, just barely pulling themselves through the dirt. Have you felt that way? Because I have. Some of you are still picturing that. You're like, did he really do that as a kid? Come on, everybody did that. Following Christ can be a difficult venture. Can it? So how can we maintain our joy in the midst of suffering and sacrifice? When those two things, when suffering and sacrifice actually threaten our joy, how can we maintain it when the very things that are included in following Christ threaten it? And that's what I want to talk about this morning. Really want to seek to answer that question. How can we maintain our joy in the midst of suffering and sacrifice? I'd like you to look at 2 Corinthians chapter 4, and I want you to hear the word of the Lord through the mouthpiece of a man who knew suffering. His name is Paul. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse number 16, he says this, "So we do not lose heart, though our outer self is wasting away." The first thing I'd like to highlight this morning is the simple fact that God doesn't want us to lose heart in the midst of serving Him. Are you serving Christ this morning? Are you seeking to follow Him with your life? Have you felt some of the pain of discipleship? Know this, brothers and sisters. God doesn't want us to lose heart in the midst of serving Him. Notice it says, we do not lose heart. What does that mean? What does it mean to lose heart? Well, there are two primary meanings of that word. It's a single word in the Greek. It's ekakeo. And this word has two primary meanings. One is to lose heart means to lose your motivation, to lose your enthusiasm, to become discouraged, to lose your drive. So to lose heart means to lose enthusiasm. The picture here maybe could be explained better if I told you a story about Liesl's niece. Her name was Jenny, and she passed away a few years ago. She had cystic fibrosis, and she was only 24 years old. She married a man who was in the Air Force. They were married for a couple years. But when you have cystic fibrosis, it's a life where you realize it's going to have an early terminus. Well, about a year before Jenny passed away, she was really blessed with an opportunity to get a new set of lungs. You see, cystic fibrosis reduces lung function, and eventually you die because of that. Well, she was blessed with an opportunity to get on a donor list, to get to the top of the list, and then to find a match, and then she was able to have a lung transplant. I mean, really an incredible blessing. Our family really rejoiced at that. It was a blessing from God. We had prayed for that. Well, things seemed to be looking up. We were all very hopeful that this would extend her life for a number of years, now that she had a new set of lungs. But it was the month of January, and she started to have symptoms of pneumonia. They didn't know if it was pneumonia. They didn't know if there was some other sort of infection. She's put into the hospital through a series of tests and exams. They finally came to realize, no, it wasn't pneumonia and it wasn't an infection. It was actually her own body was rejecting the lungs. Well, when Jenny heard that news, she lost heart. She lost her enthusiasm for life, her motivation to keep on fighting. She knew, well, that means it's probably over. I can even remember getting a phone call from family members. They said, Lucas, you really need to pray for Jenny. She's not eating. She's depressed. Things aren't looking good. I mean, in other words, what were they saying? Jenny had lost heart. She had lost her motivation. She had lost her drive because of this news. I want to say this about the Christian life. Sometimes we face difficulty, things like suffering and deep sacrifice. And as a result of that, we lose heart. We lose our motivation to continue to follow hard after God. We lose our enthusiasm for Christ. We lose heart. Here in this passage, we learn first that God does not want us to lose heart. Losing heart means, number one, you could lose your enthusiasm or your motivation. But number two, losing heart was used sometimes to refer to a woman in childbirth. And literally what it meant is to lose heart means to become afraid in the face of great difficulty. Any man who has ever been in the delivery room with his wife knows this scenario. You're trying to hold her hand. She's like, get over here. And she wants to squeeze the death out of your hand. The contractions are coming, you know, and she squeezes even harder on your hand. It gets difficult in that labor and delivery room, and she starts saying something like this, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. It's fear in the face of something that's very difficult. The husband tries to hold her hand, you can do it, honey, you can do it. And you're thinking to yourself, you're going to have to do it, I can't do it. She grabs you by the throat, says, you did this to me. I mean, it's a painful endeavor in the face of something very difficult. She has become afraid. She could even lose heart. Here in this passage, what we see first is that God does not want us to lose heart. Don't lose your motivation for following Christ. Don't become afraid in the face of difficulty. Don't lose heart. Actually, that's the unified voice of Scripture. You see, this phrase, don't lose heart, is used in a number of other texts. Let me just read a few for you. Luke chapter 18, verse 1. And Jesus told them a parable to the effect that they ought always to pray and not lose heart. You look at Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. And let us not grow weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we, many of us have it memorized, if we faint not. It's the same Greek word as if we don't lose heart. Don't grow weary in well-doing. In due season you'll reap if you don't lose heart. You get to 2 Thessalonians 3:13. As for you, brothers, don't lose heart in doing good. God doesn't want you to be discouraged in His service. God doesn't want you to lose heart. But when it comes down to it, I guess if I'd ask each one of you, you probably don't want to lose heart either, do you? I mean, God doesn't want us to, but there's no one here that would probably raise their hand and say, oh, I love being discouraged. Well, I love losing my drive for Christ. I love it. Sign me up for that. There's no one that really volunteers for that. There's no one that says, I want to live an Eeyore life. I think that's my calling. You know Eeyore on Winnie the Pooh, where his tail's always missing. There's always a rain cloud above his head. No motivation. No enthusiasm. No anything. There's no one that really wants that. God doesn't want it for you. You don't want it for you. So then why do we struggle with it? And that's the real question. As much as we don't want discouragement, there's something identified in the middle of verse number 16 that threatens to make us lose heart. Notice with me verse number 16. It says, we do not lose heart, though our outward self is wasting away. Well, wait a second. Let's slow it down. We do not lose heart, though our outer self is wasting away. What is it that threatens our joy? What is it that threatens to cause us to lose heart? It's our outer self wasting away. What that means is it's our suffering and sacrifice in association with Christ. When our outer self is wasting away, it causes us to lose joy sometimes. And so number one is God doesn't want us to lose heart in the midst of serving Him. But number two is this, the sufferings and sacrifices in association with Christ threaten our joy. Paul says here that his body was perishing. It was wasting away. I want you to think of a stream eroding the bank. The melt from the mountains starts surging through this little stream, and suddenly the bank begins to erode away. That's what Paul is saying about his life. He's saying the sufferings and the sacrifices in connection with Christ have caused my life to erode away. My outer body, my body is actually wasting away. And friends, that can threaten our joy. It can cause us to lose heart in the midst of serving Christ. What are some of these things that actually erode our spirits? Well, things like financial hardship, health issues, physical weakness, just being worn out or stressed out or being in times of conflict. They can erode your joy. They can threaten the attitude of your heart. And before you know it, because of this enduring time of suffering or this deep measure of sacrifice, before you know it, you're kind of like four-day-old soda. You're flat, you have no fizz left, there's nothing. I don't know how your life is right now, but there are some people that because of suffering and sacrifice, they've kind of flatlined. They're just functional. They have no more enthusiasm, no more drive, no more courage. They've just flatlined. Because the wasting away of our life, the ebbing away of our vitality, the erosion of even our bodies in connection with serving Christ can threaten our joy. If Paul were a car, if Paul were a car, he would be a 2013 model with 350,000 miles on it. That would be Paul.
Wow, that's heavy wear in here.
Yeah. I mean, hard use, high mileage. That was Paul. He's the type of guy, he'd tell you his age, and you'd be like, whoa, you look way older than that. Life hasn't treated you well. That's what you'd say about Paul. You'd say that about Paul because he'd been beaten so many times. He'd been malnourished so many times. He'd been sleepless so many nights. He'd been rejected and driven out. He'd been whipped and he'd been stoned. You'd look at him and you'd say, man, that's hard use and high mileage. And a life like that, a life where you spend and you're willing to be spent for the cause of ministry, a life like that can threaten your joy. My friends, have you ever thought about your life? Are you willing to spend your life and have your life be spent for the cause of Christ? Are you willing to do that? Or are you trying to hold on to stuff? Well, I kind of carve off this section for God, for discipleship, for following Christ, and the rest of this is mine. I've got to protect this. How are you living for Christ? Because really, he calls you to follow his son with pure abandonment, with hands open, clutching nothing, leaving everything behind, total follow. That's what he calls us to. And if you start following Christ that way, you will know the pain of spending and being spent in discipleship. If you know nothing of this pain, then my friends, you probably know nothing about discipleship. I am sick of hearing people that talk about discipleship and they want no pain. I'm reminded of Amy Carmichael's poem. It's entitled, "He Hath No Scar." The end of the poem says this: "How could you have followed far and yet have no scar?" And it's because, my friends, following Christ is a life wherein you spend and you are spent for him and his kingdom. Paul knew that, and that's why he talks about his life just kind of wasting away. For Paul, dying wasn't an end to life. It was a way of life. Let me say that again. For Paul, dying was not an end to life. It was a way of life. That's what you see in three consecutive verses, verse 10, verse 11, and verse 12. Paul's just going to talk about death. Notice with me verse number 10. He says, "Always carrying in the body the death of Jesus." Notice verse number 11. "For we who live are always being delivered over to death for Jesus' sake." Notice verse number 12. "So death is at work in us." Even in the verse that we're looking at, verse number 16, he says, "Though our outward self is wasting away." It's not like it's once, it's one and done. He says, this is an ongoing process. Wasting away, death in us is a way of life. That's what he says. Paul, on a number of occasions, just talks. I mean, he actually is one who says this. In 1 Corinthians 15, he says, "We are in danger every hour. I die daily." That's what he says. Death for Paul was a way of life. His greatest ambition, Philippians 3:10, "That I may know him and the power of his resurrection, and the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death." His greatest ambition, to fellowship in Christ's sufferings and be made conformable unto his death. Paul's the one who says this: "I bear in my body the marks of our Lord Jesus." Remember Jesus was whipped? Remember the scars that went across here? Remember Jesus had the crown of thorns? Do you remember that? Do you remember Jesus? He says, "Listen, I've got scars similar to Christ. I have suffered," he says. Those who follow Christ must be willing to die. Some people will sign up for the Christianity thing because they're willing to be blessed. Some people will sign up for the Christianity thing because, hey, I want to go to heaven. If you're going to sign up for the Christianity thing, you have to be willing to die. Because if Jesus were here this morning, he would look you in the eyes and he says, "If you want to follow after me, then you must deny yourself. Take up your cross daily. Die daily. And follow me." It's Luke chapter 9. That's what Jesus would tell us. Paul experienced persecution at the hands of men. He bore our Lord's rejection. He waded through physical dangers, sickness, injuries, pressures, and distresses in order to serve the Lord. And each facet of suffering cost Paul a piece of his life. As you live godly in Christ Jesus, you will suffer too. But although this is going on, even though Paul has been suffering for his life, even though this was his way of life, he did not lose heart. I mean, that's what verse 16 says. It says, "So we do not lose heart, even though our outer self is wasting away." So how is it, in the context of suffering, that Paul did not lose heart or hope? Because I think that's what we really want to know. I can say this, if you're a disciple, it means you're suffering. God doesn't want you to lose heart in the midst of their suffering, but suffering can steal our joy. So how do we prevent that from happening? How, in a context of suffering and deep sacrifice, can I maintain my joy and not lose heart? I want to give you two things that Paul says here. Two things. They both start with the letter R. So how is it in the midst of suffering that you can retain your joy and not lose heart? There's two things that start with the letter R. The first one is remember, and the second one is renew. Remember and renew. Let's take each one of those in turn. We must remember what God is doing through our sacrifices and sufferings. If you want to not lose heart, if you want to retain your joy, you must remember what God is doing through your sacrifice and suffering. What is God doing through this? I think sometimes we're like, especially when it comes to hard times, trials, deep sacrifice, how long, O Lord? That's our prayer. How long? We're like the prayer of the prophets, right? When will this finally be over? When can this be done? When can I get through it and it be over? He says, wait a minute. In the midst of your deepest pain, in the midst of your most soul-searching sacrifice, in the midst of those times, remember what God is doing through them. So what is God doing through them? What are we supposed to remember? We're supposed to remember that in the midst of our suffering and our sacrifice, God is actually going to display his power and his presence. Do you realize that if you endure through suffering, if you endure through deep sacrifice in a way that pleases the Lord, then you're going to project to this world that God is powerful and he is present. Where do we see that in the text? I want you to look at verse number 7, 2 Corinthians 4, 7. Paul says this, we have this treasure in jars of clay. What is the treasure? It's the excellency of the knowledge of Christ, the glory of God in the face of Jesus, from verse number 6. This ministry of the gospel, from verse number 1. We have this treasure in jars of clay. Fragile, feeble jars, frail vessels. We have this treasure in jars of clay in order to show the surpassing power belongs to God and not us. You see, even though we're frail, and even though the pressure is great, the power of endurance comes from God and not us. God's power transcends our limitations. God will sustain those who are his in the midst of suffering. You keep reading here. Notice what he says, verse number 8. We are afflicted in every way. And he's got this little caveat. But we're not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. You see, when you respond to suffering and sacrifice the right way, then the world is going to look at you and they're going to say, wow, you're really afflicted. How are you handling it like that? Wow, you seem like you're perplexed, but you don't seem like you're in despair. How is that happening? You seem like you're being persecuted and you're struck down. How are you acting as though you're not destroyed or forsaken? You see, because as you respond right to suffering and sacrifice, you show the power and the presence of God. Maybe I could illustrate it this way. I want you to imagine, if you would, a 3-year-old girl. She's at the Atlantic Ocean for the very first time on the beach. How many of you would love to kind of escape a little bit of February winter, in order to March, escape a little, head to the beach? Here's this 3-year-old girl at the beach. The waves are crashing. Well, as you look at the camera screen, what you see is this 3-year-old girl standing way too close to where those waves are crashing. Way too close. You're watching on the TV screen, and this little girl is there, and you're watching this next huge wave come in. And you know that when that thing smashes down, that surf is going to rage and just sweep her away. You're watching the wave breaks and you almost close your eyes, you wince, you're not sure you want to see this. But as you keep looking, this wave comes through, it rushes, and the little girl moves a little bit. But she kind of settles back down and the surf goes back out. And you're like, how in the world could she stand such a terrible wave like that? And that's when the camera kind of pans out. And you see that standing next to her is her father. And he's holding her hand. And so even though these waves come crashing in, and they could very easily sweep her away if she were on her own, it doesn't happen. Because her father is present. And he is powerful. And he's holding her. My friends, when we go through sacrifice and suffering the right way, then we display to the world that God, our Father, is holding our hand. And he is displaying his power and presence in those things. And we need to remember that. Not only do we need to remember God's presence and power, but we need to remember that others are being strengthened through our suffering. The suffering is not in vain. Paul realized that life was flowing from him, but it was flowing into the church. He said, it wasn't just ebbing away and getting washed away, and there goes my life. Boy, that was pointless. What a waste. No, as his life was being eroded away, it was actually bringing life into the church. That's what he says in verse number 12. Death is at work in us. But what does the rest of the verse say? But life in you. You see, death was at work in him, but it was actually bringing life to others. Some of you have suffered deeply. Some of you have gone through loss. Some of you have had sleepless nights. Some of you have used all of your savings to be part of this church plant. Some of you have left family behind on the other side of this country. Some of you have shed tears at night. But I want to say, as life is ebbing from you, know this. Look around you this morning. If life is coming out of you, it is flowing into the church. Death is at work in us, but life in you. And as Paul remembered that, it encouraged him. It helped him not lose heart. Do you see that? God's power and presence. He needed to remember that. He needed to remember that others were being spiritually strengthened. He needed to remember, the third thing he needed to remember, is that the resurrection would come. You're like, what? What are you talking about? Look at verse number 14. Verse number 14. Knowing that he who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus and bring us with you into his presence. God can use suffering to aim our hearts at heaven. And that's a good thing. God can use pain and sacrifice to remind us of heavenly glories. The worst thing that can happen to you is you could die, Paul says. But even that can't discourage us because we're going to be resurrected one day. Life wins. For Paul, he says this, "For me to live is Christ." How does the rest of the verse go? "And to die is gain." Why? Because he believed in the resurrection. He believed in heavenly glories. And so we need to be reminded of these when our life is ebbing away through sacrifice and suffering. Not even death can make our story of sacrifice and service to Christ have a bad ending. So far this is what we've done. God doesn't want you to lose heart in the midst of serving him. But suffering and sacrifice threaten that. So how can we battle against the consequences of suffering and sacrifice and still retain our joy in serving Christ? How can we do that? Remember, number one was by remembering. That was the first R word. The second thing is by being renewed. And that's what Paul deals with in the last couple verses of the chapter. It says, starting in verse 16, "Though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day." When it comes to our spiritual lives, God wants newness. He wants us to be again made new. That's what the word means. Renewed means to be again made new. He wants us to be again made new each day. Be renewed day by day. It's kind of like brushing your teeth. You're supposed to do it every day. Just a little health announcement. Please brush your teeth daily. If you don't brush your teeth daily, then death builds up in your mouth. Liesl's favorite saying to me is, something crawled in your mouth and died. That's what she says. Something crawled in your mouth. I'm like, honey, I just brushed my teeth. You know, that's the worst thing, when you just finished brushing your teeth and she says it. Listen, if you don't brush your teeth, then death builds up. You've got to do it daily. It needs to be again made new. He says, listen, your soul's like that. You need to be renewed day by day so death in this present world doesn't build up on you. That's what Paul is saying. You need to be remade. The things that the curse is seeking to mar, you in association with Christ can have reversed. The only other place in the New Testament where this renewed, this word renewed is used, it's used in Colossians chapter 3, verse 10. It says, and you have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Renewed day by day. How? By coming and growing in knowledge in association with your creator. Come back to your creator and find renewal. And in doing that, it will help you not lose heart. Be remade. You know, I think as the Lord looks down at our lives, he sees us rusting and rotting because of the suffering and sacrifice. He sees things eroding, and he wants to remake it. I have this picture of my older brother. He got into this phase of life where he wanted to restore an old Jeep. So he bought two of them. One was supposedly for parts, and you know, the other one was supposed to be the main deal. I think it's still pretty much a mess in his garage. However, at one juncture, he made the most progress that he's ever made, and it was because he knew a mechanic. The mechanic said, hey, I'll tow this thing over, and you can use one of my empty stalls, and you can use the tools and work on this. And so what is he doing? He's going to these places where there's rust. He's grinding it out, and he's patching things up, and he's making them new. He's restoring what had rotted over use and time. And I think as God looks down at his children, he says, some of you have been rusted. Some of you have death building up, and you need restoration. And so he says, be renewed day by day. If you want to avoid losing heart in the midst of serving Christ, you need day by day renewal. Come in contact with your Creator and let the only one who can reverse the curse do his work on your soul. That's what Paul is saying here. Be renewed day by day. When we lived in Texas, actually our last summer there, we had 100 days of over 100 degrees while we were there. It was a blazing hot summer. Well, we lived out in this flat area where the wind just blew through. It didn't cool you down. It was more like a hairdryer on high, blowing in your face nonstop. So at various points in our time in Texas, we would buy these $49.99 pools from Walmart. They were the kind that had an inflatable ring around the top. Kind of bubbled out like this, you just filled them with your hose. How many of you have ever seen one of those? Yeah, they're cheap. They're meant to be cheap. Soon they become lopsided. They tip. I mean, it's a mess. But anyway, so we would just do that yearly. We'd spend $49.99 and just have something for the kids to cool off in. Well, you get these things filled up, and inevitably they get pinholes. All the kids say, I didn't do it. But you're watching them with sticks, you know. They're like, what do you mean you didn't do it? You know? So they have these pinholes. They have these pinholes, and over time, if you just leave things go their course, what's going to happen? Well, the water in that pool is just going to diminish. Now, how is it that we can renew the level of that pool water? Now, some of you are thinking, oh, we got to patch the hole. No, 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 I said renew the water level. Because patching the hole doesn't renew the water. I mean, it stops the leak, but it doesn't renew the water. The way you renew the water is actually by taking a hose and putting it in the top and refilling the level. How is it in life? We're kind of like this pool, and life has all of these pinholes called suffering and sacrifice, where we see our vitality ebbing away. How is it in a life like that that we can be renewed, filled back up? How is that? We have to put the hose in. And the hose, Paul goes on to say, the hose here is actually a life of faith. You live by faith, and that renews you. He says you need to be renewed day by day, and the way you do that is by living a life of faith. Notice with me verse number 18. We look not at the things that are seen, but at the things that are unseen. So when I'm feeling like the water level of my soul is low, what do? I put the hose of faith in, and I focus at things that are unseen. Do you see? That's what he's saying. We look at the things that are seen, but the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. You look through the lens of faith, and you see the unseen. And when you really look at the unseen things, then you are renewed in your soul. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not real. Think of some of the unseen spiritual realities that can encourage your heart. Can you see forgiveness? No, but it's real. If you're a Christian, you've been forgiven. There's no condemnation. Can you see heaven? No, but my friends, eternity with Christ is real, and that can encourage your hearts. Can you see the intercession of Christ right now? No, but he ever lives to make intercession for you. Let that encourage your hearts. Start focusing on the unseen realities instead of these temporal things that are passing away. You see, suffering and sacrifice is temporary. But these realities that Paul is focusing on by faith, these are the things that cause us to be encouraged. Back in the 1990s, girls used to make their bangs stick up about 12 inches tall. I mean, it was a competition. Do you remember that? Like, I can rat it and spray it, rat it, spray it, rat it, spray it, and pretty soon I can have an entire wall like this. They used to walk slower because they weren't very aerodynamic. You know, I mean, it was like wind resistance on this, their bangs. Do you remember those days? And then you remember how you pegged your pants? It's like one fold over, two folds up. You pegged your pants. I mean, that was kind of high-top sneakers. I mean, pegged and high-top sneakers. That was, and those wristbands, you slap bands. Do you remember those? All of you are going down memory lane. And then you'd go to the mall. Do you remember going to the mall back in the 90s, back in the day? Back when they didn't have shoes, you know, you walked uphill both ways back in the 90s. Remember that? You go to the mall back in the 90s, and there would be these posters that were set out of these different stores. And there'd be a crowd surrounded around these posters. And the crowd would look absolutely ridiculous. They'd be crossing their eyes. They'd be like zooming in and out like this. Like, what in the world? They were called Magic Eye posters. How many of you remember Magic Eye posters? They started being in the newspapers. They started being those books that you sit in the coffee table in your living room. They're Magic Eye puzzles, Magic Eye posters. And I remember the very first time I see people gathered around these things, I thought, those people are a bunch of idiots. And I am for sure not going over there and making a fool of myself. There's nothing there. I can't see anything except a bunch of pixelated squares. I'm not crossing my eyes and making a fool of myself. I remember that. Until everybody goes away. You know, you look both ways. Okay, let's go try this thing. So you go in there. You remember, you couldn't see it. There's nothing there. I don't believe it. And then all of a sudden, if you could cross your eyes just right and get just the right perspective, then all of a sudden, like a shark, a three-dimensional shark kind of pops out of the page. I can remember the first time I saw that, I was like, man, it is there. It is real. It's not seen. But when you have the right perspective, it's as real as you and me. Do you know the life of faith is that way? People will look at you and say, why are you crossing your eyes? And why are you zooming your head? What are you doing? I don't get that. There's nothing there. You're saying, no, it's as real as you and me. I see it through the lens of faith. The unseen becomes seen. And that renews your soul. My friend, if you're struggling this morning because of sacrifice or suffering, focus your heart on the unseen things. And suddenly, when you do that, things come into perspective. All of a sudden, the suffering and sacrifice, they come into perspective, and you can truly understand from God's point of view what these things really are. That's why in verse number 17, Paul's not crazy. He's not crazy because he's looking through the lens of faith, and all of a sudden, things have come into perspective. He says this light, momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. What does he say about this affliction? Well, the first thing he says is it's light. Now, he doesn't mean it's easy and he doesn't mean it's painless. He simply means that when you compare it with glory, it's nothing. Romans chapter 8, verse 18, he says, "For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." He says, my suffering and my sacrifice is light. Now, I don't know anyone here. If you didn't have faith and you were to think about the sufferings of Paul, you would not say that they're light. In chapter 11 of the same book, he says this. He says, "I have great labors, more imprisonments, countless beatings, often near death, 40 lashes less one at the hands of the Jews 3 times. I was beaten with rods. I was stoned. I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I spent adrift in the sea. I was in dangers from rivers, from robbers, from my own people, from the Gentiles. I was in danger in the city, in danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brethren. I had many sleepless nights. I was in hunger and I was in thirst. I was often without food. I was in cold and exposure." He says all these things, that's where I lived in. And yet in this part, he's not crazy. He says, oh, those were light. Those were light in comparison with glory. My friends, sometimes the reason you think your suffering is so huge is because you're not comparing it to the right thing. You think it's such a great weight. I'm suffering beyond all sufferings. I mean, look at my coworker. Stop. That's your problem. You're comparing it with the wrong thing. You need to gather up all of those sufferings and all of your sacrifice and then put it in comparison with glory. Imagine you go home. You forgot to check the mailbox on Saturday. You finish the service. You go home, check the mailbox. You get there. You look in the mailbox, and there's a letter from an attorney. You're like, an attorney? I never ordered an attorney. It's one of those things you don't forget. When you have a meeting with an attorney, you don't forget it, right? So you're like, what is this letter from an attorney? You open it up and it's a bill from an attorney. It's even worse. It's a bill. It's a bill for $500. Now maybe you got a lot of cash laying around. That's no problem for you. But maybe for most of us, $500 is an unexpected trouble. How am I going to make my car payment and still pay this $500 bill? And what do I have a bill for anyways? I never saw an attorney. And you're really frustrated and you're irritated and you feel like this is ruining your day and what a downer. Until you continue reading. As you continue reading the bill letter, it says, "This is a processing fee for the inheritance your great aunt left you of $5 million. Now, all of a sudden, in comparison, that $500 is nothing because you're inheriting $5 million. But you see, without the point of comparison, it's a heavy weight that can destroy your day. So it is with many of the sufferings and sacrifices that we make and that we endure. We think, this is terrible. It's the worst thing in the world. How can I keep going? I can't even take another breath. Stop. Wake up to reality. Look through the lens of faith and put it in comparison with glory. Then all of a sudden, it becomes light. Sometimes I also think, not only do we not have a point of comparison, and that's why they're so weighty. Sometimes I also think that we hold so tightly to fleeting things that that's why they hurt us so deeply. Why does loss really hurt us so deeply? Why does the having to give up of money or the loss of sleep or the, and we could go on and on, the things that we suffer, why do they pain us so deeply? I think it's because we clutch onto them more tightly than we clutch onto glory. Colossians 3 says, listen, my friends, seek things that are above, set your affections on things above. But for many of us, our affections are down here. We're seeking things down here. And so when we go through suffering down here, it pains us deeply. I think Paul's point here is get off of the down here and set your gaze up there, and then it won't hurt you so much. You see, the loss of something you don't love doesn't hurt you. Let me say that again. The loss of something you don't love doesn't hurt you. So why are you so pained by the loss of money? Because you love money. Why are you so pained by the loss of comfort? Because you love comfort. You see, the loss of something you don't love doesn't pain you. I got a call a couple years ago from my mom. It's one of those out of the blue calls, and she said, Lucas, I just wanted you to know that Jan Estep passed away. Well, I don't mean to sound cold-hearted, but other than the fact that a human being died, which is a tragic thing, because people are made in the image of God. But other than the fact of that, it didn't bother me any more than opening the newspaper and reading the obituaries of people I don't know. When you don't know them, it doesn't pain you. Well, who was Jan Estep? Well, he was my grandfather. You say that didn't pain you? No, it didn't pain me. Because he was my biological grandfather that walked out on my mom and my uncle when they were kids. He was the grandfather that paid no support. He was the grandfather that never visited. He was the grandfather that when they grew up and wanted to make contact, he wanted nothing to do with them. He was the grandfather I never met. I wouldn't even know he's my grandfather. The last name of my mom never was, her maiden name wasn't even Estep. I would have never known this guy if I crossed him on the street because I'd never met him before. So you say, so you weren't pained, you weren't grieving all day? Well, unfortunately, no. I didn't know him. Listen, things you don't love don't hurt to lose. I think some of the reason why some of the suffering and pain cripples us and paralyzes us so deeply is because we've fallen in love with things of this earth instead of setting our gaze and affection on glory. Paul says here, he says, these are light and these are momentary afflictions, verse number 17. Momentary. He doesn't mean that they're going to last for 10 seconds. He does mean the longest they can last is a lifetime, which is kind of like 10 seconds when you think about eternity. It's just momentary. The worst your suffering can last is a lifetime, but you have eternity to live in rest. It's light. It's momentary. I just want to say this. Our suffering is purposeful. Notice in that verse, he says, our light and momentary affliction is preparing. It's doing something. Do you know that affliction does something? It works. It prepares something for us. Kind of like a chef prepares a meal. Your affliction, your suffering, and your deep sacrifice is preparing something. And what is it preparing? It's preparing an eternal weight of glory. Your suffering and affliction aren't pointless. They're purposeful. My friends, when we understand this, then pain isn't something that happens to us. Pain is something that happens for us. You see, suffering and sacrifice aren't something that happened to you, as though you had a terrible day. No, deep sacrifice and suffering are things that happen for you in order to prepare a 7-course meal of glory. You see, in God's paradigm, glory is not the compensation for affliction. In God's paradigm, glory isn't something that happens in spite of affliction. In God's paradigm, affliction is what's used to produce glory. And that's what's so beautiful about it, when we can really look through the lens of faith and see things God's way. Many people look at our 70 years here on earth or our 80 years here on earth and they think in terms of life, then death. But in God's paradigm, it's death, then life. And so even the worst enemy can be turned on its head as a source of blessing. Even the worst enemy known as death can actually produce for us an eternal weight of glory. How? Well, in the Garden of Eden, man sinned, and the consequence was death. But on the cross, Christ died so that the consequence could be life. He brought an end to the curse of death. He declawed it and removed its sting. And so for the Christian, death transports us to glory. Such that Paul would be able to say this, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. For the believer, death is no longer a curse. It's perhaps our final and greatest blessing as it transports us into the very presence of God. When you're suffering, brothers and sisters, don't fix your eyes on how heavy the hurt is. Instead, fix your gaze on how heavy the glory will be in the presence of Christ. Living on mission for Christ is hard. The difficulty associated with it can threaten our joy. But we must not lose heart, because we remember that God is doing great things through our suffering. And we have the opportunity to be spiritually renewed as we look at life through the lens of faith.